Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Franica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
You may be hearing a lot of dogs barking behind me. Not my dog, though. This is one of the few instances of not my dog.
You broke into a facility and you're using their computers to record the podcast and you're keeping their vicious guard dogs at bay with stakes.
One of the things that I learned in puppy training class from the instructor is like, look, anytime you go anywhere with your puppy, you want a pocket full of treats.
Yeah.
But those treats aren't just for your dog. If a stranger dog comes up, an attack dog comes up even, you want to throw those treats away from you. Create a distraction.
Whoa.
With treats. So that's what I've been doing.
Remember that part of Master and Commander where the Royal Marines have to go up on the mast and work the swivel gun on the French ship?
They sing that song and it's not cheesy.
Clear off the deck.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get a swivel gun of treats at your house.
The thing about treats in the pocket is, Ben, I don't know how closely this episode is going to line up with an episode of The Greatest Generation we just recorded, but you just told me a tale of woe about your shorts situation.
Oh, yeah.
I have my own tale of woe about my shorts. My shorts are being ruined by dog treats. You stick dog treats in your pocket for any longer than like an hour, and there's like a huge grease stain that forms.
You got to do Ziploc baggie inside the pants.
But I know that's what I have to do, but it is so hard to get into your pocket and then inside another pocket to get at those treats.
Because you don't want to pull the baggie out and then faff around with the baggie.
You know what I want? You remember the female condom? I want something that I can put inside my pocket that like has a rim to it.
Yeah.
So that I can more easily get into my pocket and get at those treats.
You want to protect the entire pocket and the area around it.
Right. Yeah. So that there's no transmission of dog treat grease to any of the areas. You want to keep it safe.
Yeah. Keep all that stuff away. Yeah.
That's an invention that hasn't been made yet, though. I'm just dealing with dirty pockets, and now I'm doing that thing where I'm soaking my clothes all the time.
Many people would say that Uxbridge Shimoda is a marginal, at best, media production company.
Sure.
I would say it could do anything. We could make a car wind visor that has a licensed image of Data and Geordi sitting in a shuttlecraft.
You know what? This is a great point. We could buy Brode and make Brode a tendril of our company.
I don't think we can afford Brode, but we could buy a company that makes rubber underpants and modify some of their designs to fit inside a pocket.
Right. Yeah. We need to join up with Big Underpants. We need to seat at the underpants table is what we need.
We need a joint venture.
Yeah. You know what? That's a great point. We need, as we look toward the future of Uxbridge Shimoda.
Right.
We need to be thinking about these new frontiers.
Right. What lines of business can we be opening up? What strange new business worlds can we explore?
Yeah. Yeah. It's time to be a disruptor, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm ready to disrupt. I want to disrupt this episode, though, Adam. I mean, I don't want to use a phaser. I want to use some heavy-duty Klingon shit on this one.
I do too, Ben. What a weird, fun episode of Strange New Worlds we've got on deck today. I am excited to talk about it with you. Let's go ahead and get it started with Strange New Worlds, Season 1, Episode 5, Spockamock.
Adam, I said this on the last episode. Don't care for the last time on with this series.
Yeah, I skipped through it, as I promised you. I didn't watch it. Did I miss anything?
I watched it. This is maybe the most annoying one that they've done so far. Like, one of the things was just reestablishing that Enterprise Bingo exists. Mm. It literally just showed the part of that one scene with the midriff and the Enterprise Bingo reference, and that was all there was to it.
Are we at a point now in society where we can't trust people with context clues?
Trust us with the clues.
I think we can get ourselves up to speed with the context clues.
I don't need to be reminded of the existence of Enterprise Bingo. I'd much rather rewatch an earlier episode and be like, oh man, they planted Enterprise Bingo. I didn't even realize.
This show is preventing you from achieving the satisfaction of that moment.
I almost feel like the last time on is there in Strange New Worlds to be like, hey, listen, I know that we've made some uneven, bumpy rides of shows here in the new Star Trek universe.
Uh-huh.
Now we're making almost a perfect show, but it can't be perfect. We can't make it great right off the bat.
This is the beauty mark of Strange New Worlds, isn't it?
This is the salt that's bringing out the sweet, baby.
You know what? I've come around to it now. I love this. Strange New Worlds is a perfect face, but that beauty mark really makes you recognize how beautiful it is.
Not so symmetrical after all.
Ben, it's the lava shrine level of Mortal Kombat that we open on, right? Everyone loves that level of Mortal Kombat.
It would be logical for the Vulcans to do some bridge maintenance, but they just can't get it past Congress.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure can't.
Spock is walking up to a huge shrine when Spike Jones asks a Vulcan, what kind of shrine y'all got? This is the answer.
It's an arena, though, isn't it? A wedding arena? Did you not feel like when you were getting married that you were entering an arena of marriage?
I mean, I feel like if there had been a like Fight Club style circle around the space in which my wife and I were becoming an item, I would have been more intimidated, which would have been hard. I was scared on my wedding day. It's a big deal.
I was so filled with envy watching this scene, but not for the reason you may think. My wedding did not have gongs or bells.
Yeah.
And I'm really missing the gongs and the bells.
Yeah.
In my memory.
Would it be Vulcan appropriation to incorporate gongs and bells into weddings from now on?
My wedding was punctuated by one of my very best friends playing Not a Surf's Always Love at my wedding, and it was one of my favorite moments of my entire life.
You've mentioned that band before. I don't think I've ever heard a single song by them.
You've probably heard Popular. That's like the song most people have heard, but they're a great band, and I love them a lot. You didn't have gongs or bells at your wedding. Ben, you invited me to your wedding.
I did, yeah.
And that was one way we are different.
I think you were already married when we met, so.
Yeah, exactly. I want to make that clear. It wasn't an affront.
Yeah.
It wasn't a message I was sending.
No, I felt the same way. Like, if my mother-in-law could have had a hexagonal screen with a bunch of bells hanging from the rungs that she could have shaken whenever something momentous happened at our wedding, she would have loved that.
It is logical to shake the bells, right? Instead of hitting them with a mallet, they're too many and they're too little.
It's so interesting how Vulcans are like extremely logic based, but they're also so ceremonial.
Yeah.
There's so many rituals and ceremonies, and like when you go to a religious function and they have to like get through all the fucking stuff. Okay, everybody got to stand up now. Okay, now everybody has to kneel. Now everybody has to sit. And we're back to kneeling.
For the viewers at home, Ben is describing his own wedding.
We had a very short ceremony.
The only thing I remember about your wedding is you breaking the ceremonial wine bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It was so amazing.
I didn't break that. That was not me.
It was a wobbly table it was on. Everyone knows it.
There was a wobbly table. There was a fancy bottle of wine that got broken. We had to bring in one of the regular garbage bottles of wine that we had brought in to serve our guests.
That was my gift wine, Ben. You got it off the gift table. God,
fortunately for me, I didn't have to enter ritual combat with the non-Vulcan side of my personality.
At any point, you could have called for Calafi. Neither of you did at your wedding, and I didn't either.
I was so glad that my wife did. I fucking knew she was going to call for Calafi.
God. I mean, here's the thing. Spock approaches to Pring, ready to be betrothed.
Yeah.
And she rejects him for being human. And it is shocking because Spock touches his ears and they're round.
He touches his bangs and they're not straight.
And to Pring is like, I want you to Calafi that guy over there, and whip pan over, and it's Vulcan Spock.
Yeah.
And Vulcan Spock, surprisingly, is pissed.
Yeah. The use of TOS music cue, very, very fun.
I didn't get that reference at all. This was directly inspired by the scene in The Cable Guy, where Jim Carrey and Matthew Broderick have that fight at medieval times.
Mm, yeah.
It canonizes that movie in Star Trek.
And that's why we're excited to announce right here on the show today, the next tour that The Greatest Generation does will be a review of the movie Cable Guy.
Do you think we could get our next tour rooted only in medieval times arenas? Like, could we book them and just do a show in the dirt? In the middle?
Is medieval times bookable? Is that a bookable ass venue?
I want to find out, because if it is, I want to do our show in the dirt, and I want our friends at DeSoto eating Cornish game hens with their hands and drinking flagons of mead.
Yeah, I want to see our fans served by the wenches that they deserve to be served by.
Welcome to medieval times. I'll be your serving wench, Melinda. Might I fetch you something from the barkeep?
Yeah, I agree. Finally.
Finally. Yeah, this is a pretty awesome combat scene because it's Ethan Peck versus Ethan Peck.
Right.
But fighting myself is so logical.
They do a great job. Like, it's so much more seamless than I feel like I've ever seen this.
Yeah.
It's more seamless than I've seen this.
I love the music. Like, this is familiar to any Star Trek fan, this musical score.
Yeah.
But the modern twist of it,
yeah,
I think feels great. It really works. The whole thing hangs together beautifully, in spite of it being extremely traumatizing to Spock.
If you hadn't caught on that this was a dream yet, human Spock getting his ticket punched by Vulcan Spock cuts right into Spock waking up in a cold sweat in his quarters on the ship.
He's had a logical dream, hasn't he?
Yeah, you don't think of Spock being a dreamer, per se. And you definitely don't think of him as a person who like has a dream about a thing and then goes and like touches his ears to make sure they're still pointy the way they're supposed to be.
Yeah, he's got to be sure. But this is the moment in the horror film where you peer into the mirror a little further and then the pointy ears stab through the round ears and then you wake up again.
Right, right, yeah.
This is not a fake wake up.
This is not Star Trek: First Contact. This is an episode of Strange New World.
It's not a fake and wake.
And the Enterprise has limped back to Starbase. It's getting put back together after their run-in with the Gorns.
One of the great effect shots in that last episode was the limping ship heading back, like with just shit flying off of it. And now it is back at Starbase One, having the ship put back together.
Yeah, they went and collected all that shit that flew off of it, and they're stapling it back on.
You know it's a canoe-class starship doing the gathering, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Captain Esteban is definitely out there getting all that shit.
Yeah, gathering it by the book, for sure.
We don't know what we're talking about here.
Spock is getting his quarters all squared away for his fiancée, T'Pring, to show up, and she arrives and begins to express her excitement for seeing him in a super ritualistic way that I've only ever seen my wife perform outside of this show.
I love learning more about this relationship and Vulcan relationships in general, because the Vulcans are absolute edgelords. This scene is a total throb, and there is no chance they don't just have sting sex the whole time they're together, right?
Sex. I mean, it's fantastic. It's great fun, and it has this cosmic significance. I mean, we shouldn't take it for granted.
Like, they're having sex right now in this scene. We just don't know it.
This scene is sex. This episode should have gotten a mature audience's rating.
Yeah. Spock, is this your idea of sex?
Yeah, because, like, the barbs that she's throwing come early and often. She is criticizing the way his quarters are set up.
It is hard to imagine that a Vulcan has slept in here.
These are my quarters.
She is just like stomping his nuts over his quarters in a way that... I mean, when you get into a serious committed relationship, you end up sacrificing the ability to decorate using all of your own decisions, right?
Right, yeah. All of these things have to be done by committee.
Right. And that ties into the other story, right? When Pike is talking about the democracy of the Federation.
Yeah.
That's what he's talking about.
The ambassador is like, how do you select patio furniture in your culture?
Yeah.
And I'm like, we look at 500 different websites that sell patio furniture and we fill up carts and we don't check out. We do not check out under any circumstances.
We just live weeks and weeks with reminder emails from these businesses saying, hey, did you forget something, buddy? Yeah. Would another 5% off help you? T'Pring is fucking smart, because she knows the joy of booking a work trip that is actually a vacation in disguise.
Yeah.
She's there to do this rehab work on Barjon.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the tack on. What she's there to do is actually hang out with Spock.
We must prioritize our relationship.
Of course.
And that's a super logical thing to do when you're planning a work trip.
She sent her assistant to deal with the Barjon wormhole, and she's going to deal with a different hole.
I weigh you.
This is great. They make dinner plans for that evening, except he leaves her in his quarters.
Yeah.
I think this is a really bad idea by Spock. Yeah. I don't think you can do that.
He's made some commitments to the captain that he wants to help with some diplomatic crap that Pike has to deal with. And
right.
So he's like, all right, T'Pring, I'll be back in time for our dinner reservation. Just got to do this one quick work thing. It's no big deal.
It is Chekhov's dinner reservation, isn't it?
It really is. And pretty soon we're in a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
With Admiral Newbob and Captain Pike and Uhura and Spock. And Captain Pike, I was wondering that if we were going to see the green shirt that Kirk sometimes wears on Pike.
Yeah.
It happened, baby.
Congratulations, it's green.
I love it so much. Right on down to the lower symbol, the sideways pointing arrow that says, hey, this is where my bush starts.
Yeah. Did Kirk have the badge on his breast, though? When?
Oh, good call.
I feel like he only had the badge down low. on the low badge.
Where does this rank on the Cal Hudson scale?
Oh.
Does the Cal Hudson rule apply here with the lower badge?
Does the lower badge work? Like, if the upper badge, like, gets knocked off, like, going through a subway turnstile, can you still hail someone?
A lot of friends of DeSoto have accused Strange New Worlds of communicating directly with us.
Mm.
And I don't think there's any greater example of this.
Right.
Like, by Cal Hudsoning the badge to Belly Button.
Right.
No one has ever had more confidence in the history of Star Trek
than Pike.
Based on this position.
He's got show hair and Cal Hudson confidence.
God. This uniform shouldn't work. The shade of it, I mean.
It's beautiful.
It must be green, okay? Okay.
Admiral Neubob is giving them the rundown on the Rungovian Protectorate. These are some dudes that they want to diplome at.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have said that great joke while you were drinking a glass of water because, you know, I didn't mean to make all that water come out of your nose, Adam.
That's not water, Ben. They basically want to build a warp freeway through their neighborhood.
Yeah. And the worry is that these guys will make a deal with the Klingons or the Romulans. It's kind of a whose rose is going to get accepted type of deal.
You want to be first.
Yeah. They want to be first. And, you know, it's a fight against the clock because the Rungovians are already communicating with these competitive species. And the first people that the Federation sent were not their best, Adam. They sent Tellarites to diplome at these guys, and it did not go well. They show some file footage of this, and this is a just shot of a diplomat screaming his head off at another diplomat.
This is dumb as hell. Why send a Tuskman to do a pikeman's job?
Yeah.
Well, I'm certain we can handle the situation with considerably more delicacy and grace than the Tellarites, Bob.
Good.
It went so badly that the Rungovians are here on board the Entrepreneur. Yeah. And want to be let in. And
this is a nightmare.
Yeah. They kind of barge in. We meet Vasso and Brax.
Correct.
I think in my notes, it auto-corrected to Brad. So I just had to guess what his space name was. It's Brax, not Brad.
Let's call him Brad for the rest of the episode. I was thinking a lot about this lately, like totally not related to this episode. Here comes a tangent. Like, you know how planets are called what the Federation calls them, right?
Right.
Like Jeringa 3.
Right.
Or Monbia 7 or whatever.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
But why doesn't the Federation use the planet's own name? Like what the culture has named their planet?
Right.
As the planet? Does that seem weird to you?
I mean, we call Deutschland Germany, you know?
Here's my point. Much in the same way...
Debringa 3 has done some bad shit, much in the way of Deutschland. And so they get to get called what we call them, not what they call themselves, all right?
Some of my favorite restaurants are named like Sunny Teriyaki or... Lucky Walk number 7 or whatever, like whatever culture is, like when a culture names its own thing, often it can have an unusual name.
Right.
I want the cold open of a Star Trek show to pull up on Lucky Sun Planet Joy for You. 3.
You're going to need to wait for season 3 of Lower Decks for that, my friend.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not here for this erasure of a culture's planetary naming system.
Not every exonym is racist inherently, Adam.
Exactly.
They meet these guys. They're like, hey, we love empathy. Also, we're interested in doing diplomacy with you guys. That empathy thing is not going to come back up for a long time in this episode.
I just looked up what exonym means. A name given to a place by foreigners.
Yeah.
God, you just had that chambered.
Yeah. As opposed to an endonym, which is the name given to a place by the locals.
You're so fucking smart. I'm going to blow up this fucking show.
I watch one TikTok about endonyms versus exonyms, and suddenly I'm galaxy brain.
God, your TikTok is fucking boring. Jesus. You have the most boring. I bet the people at TikTok HQ look at your...
Hey, guys, we found it. Worst algorithm. Worst algorithm here. We got it.
I think something's broken. Because the Benjamin R account.
Pretty much everybody else has bikini babes dancing to rap songs. This guy, it's just like weird geography facts. What the hell?
I love how Pike explains what a democracy is to Vaso and Brad in a way that doesn't sound condescending or preachy.
We get our power from all our membership, so we try to listen to each other.
This felt like a magic trick to me. A magic trick that, and I love this show, I love Star Trek Discovery, but I hope Star Trek Discovery is watching Strange New Worlds in scenes like this.
Right, because they're that like dripping with self-assuredness. Like,
without a music bed right on in there to like punch it up.
Federation chauvinism not showing its ugly face in this episode.
It's just like a sensible way to do things is how it's described.
And these Rungovians are like, ooh, yeah, I like what you are telling me, sir.
I like the what you're telling me. I like how you're telling it. I like that green uniform.
And then Brad is like, who's that guy? Is that one of your Vulcans? I've heard about you guys.
It would be great if Pike's uniform was instead of like the sideways badge being just like a belt line, it's like the level of interest that the Rungovians have in being in in the Federation, and it kind of ticks up. It's like at the rib line now, the lower rib cage.
Yeah, Pike's badge is getting engorged, and and Brad is really curious about the high amount of logic displayed by the Vulcans, and we're getting ready to do some real diplomacy here, but first we got to cut away to Ortegas and Nurse Chapel, who are in their civilian attire, getting ready for some fun shore leave, and they want to take Mbenga with them.
Is it time already?
Are you serious?
Sorry.
Come on, Mbenga. You got to be ready to go.
You're still in uniform? What are you doing, man? Get your midriff out.
This is like the main thing about Ortegas. It's like, rock that midriff. Let's go. Ortegas and Chapel are super friendly in a way that I don't know has been extremely apparent up until now, because on the walk to Six Bay, they're talking about this Lieutenant Deaver guy.
Yeah.
And how he is waiting for Chapel on shore leave, and she might not be that into him.
I think that she wants to keep it a kind of friends with benefits type of arrangement.
Casual, no attachments, it's just for fun.
In a Mbenga kind of way, she may be more interested in catch and release than catch and keep.
It sounded like Mbenga had a date also, but that does not get depicted in this episode.
I was confused by that too, because Chapel and Ortegas are kind of like, hey, are we going to meet his special person or whatever?
Are we going to meet Mrs. Funny Hat?
But we never do.
Yeah. Too bad.
Honestly, like, Ortegas as the comic sensibility character on the show has a great hit rate at this point. I know we're only 5 episodes in, but doing great as a character with the comic relief.
Really, really high batting average. They head to the transporter bay where number one, La'an and Chief Kyle are there to send them off along with a few extras who are also getting off the ship for shore leave. And La'an is like signing everybody out of the ship personally.
Yeah.
Seems like something that a computer could handle on a Federation starship, but she's like,
you want something done, you've got to do it yourself.
Or Kyle, who is described later on in the episode as a massive ball breaker and a huge surprise to me.
Yeah.
You don't think Kyle could put a clipboard up on the transporter panel?
It's got plenty of room. There's so many fucking parts of this that aren't the parts that you swish up to do the actual beaming.
Ben, we talk about it all the time. The challenge of act drunk, the challenge of act funny.
Hmm.
This scene is a depiction of act embarrassed. And Dr. Mbenga steps in it so deep here, it squishes between his toes. Because when he makes reference to Una's nickname, It is so funny to me.
I don't know what I'm saying. I should probably go. Chief Kyle.
What nickname?
It's the best part of the episode to me, and an episode that I really loved.
Yeah, Mbenga is not the dude to throw out the closely kept crew secret. He is both the man of the people to know about it, but also just like enough above the fray to not realize.
It's sort of like the in-person, I sent a text to the wrong person and I need to play it off in real life as if I didn't.
Yeah, right. It's absolutely that.
I don't know what I'm saying is such a funny thing to say to me. That I wish I had the wherewithal to say exactly that every time I've stepped in at this bed.
This episode has such funny writing. And
yeah.
This is like a good comedy script level awkward moment here.
It really is.
Which is so far from what Star Trek is usually capable of in terms of good comedy script type moments.
It is. Yeah.
It's well written. It's well executed. The nickname is Where Fun Goes to Die. And that's what the yeomen call number one. And
can I just say, that's a terrible nickname. It needs to be tighter.
The yeomen on the flagship should have their game a lot better.
Hey, that's the Facebook of nicknames.
I wonder if that the funniness of this moment is so good that I almost wonder if the badness of the nickname was a choice.
That's a great call.
The nickname can't be that good.
Yeah.
It's stupid. The yeomen don't know what they're talking about. If they did, they wouldn't be yeomen.
Because you can't make yeomans and below that good at nicknaming.
Like, it can't be one of those, like, it's a good joke, it's a great joke even, but I'm going to need you to stop moments.
Right.
Like, Una can't think it's funny or good.
That's true. Yeah, and that's what makes it hit.
It hits really hard.
Part of the umbrage that Una takes is, like, I could come up with a better nickname than that.
Right. So she's like, get these freaks out of my face.
Energize.
And she has Chief Kyle beam them away. And then, like, the second they're gone, interrogates Chief Kyle, like, hey, do you know about anything about this? And he does a bad job of playing it off.
No, of course not. No, no.
Again, a Chief Kyle who is described later as a total bastard. I don't get that.
If only in the history of Deep Space Nine, we'd gotten some Chief O'Brien is a fucking dickhead from the Lower Decks people on Deep Space Nine.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
Yeah.
That would have been amazing. Hey, speaking of playing it off badly, Adam.
Yeah, this is tough.
Spock comes home to T'Pring, who has been chilling alone in his apartment this entire time, and it's clear that the diplomacy with the Rungovians went on a long time.
I do not doubt your duty's importance.
Yeah.
Yet we agreed this time would be for us.
And when you're really in a diplomacy, you can't just make a phone call.
You can't be
or
like,
send a text.
Hey, I need to text Bay. The Rungovians aren't going to understand that.
All of their conically shaped foods have gone cold.
I mean, it's in spite of the logic of a food that is shaped like a cone to let it go cold like that. That food is basically shaped like an unexploded volcano, and and that's the planet we come from is called Vulcan, and you let it go cold? That's not what volcanoes do. They don't go cold.
That's like part of the joy of eating in a fancy restaurant is sort of like breaking the creme brulee. Mm. Shell, like, you want to get into that cone and maybe even dig in from the side, just bust it up.
Yeah. Oh, look at that pomegranate seed right there on the side. Let me get it.
Yeah.
Let me get it.
This feels like a very contemporary conflict that they're having, this difference in how they treat their work-life balance.
Right. You said that we were going to spend the weekend together, and then you went and did a work thing.
Yeah.
I gave up my entire work thing to spend the weekend together. What the fuck are you doing?
I said I was going to be done recording today by like 5:30, and I'm looking at the clock and it says 6:30 right now.
Right.
Like, this is how that works.
And the Vulcan way of having a domestic disagreement is really intense because it is like nobody gets dysregulated. There's no yelling. But it's also like everybody is so in touch with what they are thinking about how the situation went that they are just stating it outright.
We may ultimately find ourselves incompatible.
Aspirational in a way, because I like wish. Like sometimes I get in a disagreement with someone and it like takes me until like later when I've calmed down to be like, this is what really upset me about that. And I wish I had just had the fucking wherewithal to be in touch with what that was and say that. But that's not what I said. I said this other thing, and now it's worse.
It's interesting how a walkout after an argument hits just as hard for Vulcans as it does for anyone else.
Yeah.
If you will excuse me.
Truly. I mean, a walkout with a pan down to the cold food.
Yeah.
Always hits hard. Doesn't matter what species you are.
Those cold cones say it all, don't they?
They really do. And that's our cold open, Adam. We're 15 minutes in.
Wow. After the theme, Starbase One probably has a lot of restaurants of a lot of different kinds. And this one that we're in right now is kind of fancy.
It does seem fancy.
It's here that we meet Lieutenant Colin Jost on his date with Chapel.
You look hot.
Thank you.
And Colin wants more.
He really does.
Than what Chapel is willing to give. Except Chapel's willing to give quite a lot.
Instead of talking, we could be off having fun.
Oh, I thought we might talk about us.
It's just a difference in what they're there to do.
He's the classic fuck buddy that caught feelings and is trying to upgrade the relationship where the other person really wanted it to be kind of a no strings thing. And he's the lieutenant fuckboy of the 23rd century, man. You know?
He really is.
This happens. Yeah.
Chapel sees Spock across the restaurant and she's like, oh God, this is bad. She knows immediately this shit has gone horribly wrong with T'Pring and bails out of her date with Lieutenant Colin Jost as a result.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, I love Nurse Chapel's dress and hair look in this scene. Like, I think that this show is doing such a great job of being like, in the like 60s style without seeming like it is just a parody of the 60s.
One of the weird knocks on this show is how beautiful everyone is. I'm not knocking it for that. No. I like looking at beautiful people.
back on the entrepreneur, Lieutenant Singh and Commander Una are talking to each other about how they are both the kind of people that stay at work when everybody else leaves work.
Yeah, these are people who like to work in the office on Black Friday the way I did. Like the way they describe the empty office building.
Yeah.
God, I love that. Those are the best days.
Yeah. What Una and La'an are talking about is, I think, relatable to just about everybody, but it is also the thing that most defines them in opposition to the rest of the crew. So it's the thing that, you know, has been used to assassinate their characters as not fun.
Right. The conversation is interrupted by the computer who tells them that someone is fucking around with an airlock and they are about to find out from Una and La'an, who investigate with phasers drawn.
Yeah.
Don't shoot. We're crew.
The people that they catch are a couple of younger crew members who have put on EVA suits and are getting ready to go out an airlock. And they're in big trouble, but because they're not invaders, they're not just like summarily executed.
I am so excited for these actors because you're in this episode for two scenes and you get to wear an EV suit and a normal uniform.
Yeah.
And play off of two of the biggest stars on the show in really fun scenes. Like, if you're going to get cast on this show, this is one of the great parts to get.
These are Lower Decks parts that I would not be surprised to see come back just for the investment they made in costume and loaf.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, that'd be a fun callback for sure. They're basically children, though.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back in the restaurant, Nurse Chapel is kind of telling Spock how to do girls.
It was one time.
One very entertaining time.
In a, you know, in that way that sometimes, like, you really need. Like, hey, somebody of the opposite sex who is my friend, can you catch me up on, like, what I'm missing?
I mean, their relationship is great, and I've been shipping this relationship the entire season.
Yeah.
But the intimacy of this is so delightful because It's not just that Spock doesn't get girls. It's that he's got that very relatable, he knows he's fucking up and he's still fucking up. Like, he can't get out of the death spiral, you know?
Yeah. She's suggesting that, like, Chipring feels misunderstood by him in this way. I think that Jess Bush's performance in this moment is one of my favorite moments in the episode, because she's saying, like, Chipring feels misunderstood, but it also sort of feels like a confession for what went wrong with Lieutenant Fuckboy for her.
Yep. There's a dimensionality to this that, I mean, it's a part of the entire episode, really.
Yeah, truly.
Like, when Chapel talks about one thing, she's really talking about herself. Or relating it to herself in a way that other people can see that maybe she can't.
Yeah. So she has fully inserted herself into the relationship advice racket.
Can I just say, at the end of this scene, maybe the greatest evidence for a burgeoning crush slash romance between Chapel and Spock is the look down, look up, smile. You know the move. You smile, you look down, and then your head stays down and you look up and smile again.
Mm.
This choice that Jess Bush makes here with that move is such a, like, crush projection. That is the look of someone who is crushing on someone.
I mean, and it's canonical Star Trek, right? Because Dr. Gillian Taylor did that to Spock in Star Trek 4.
Yeah, and that is now on your Mount Nerdmore as the nerdiest thing you've ever said on this show. You're absolutely right. Absolutely. All that's missing is both of them going,
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What?
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 Sounds like nonsense.
What is going on?
So we cut to Spock suggesting a terrible suggestion to Chipring.
Seriously? A Vulcan soul sharing?
This is like a super mind meld.
It feels kind of like entrapment because Spock has walked Chipring to his quarters. There's a bunch of candles.
Mm.
And what he is propositioning requires preparation, candles, and consent. It's basically mental anal, Ben.
We can truly understand each other.
All I could think was, like, with all of the Vulcan rituals we've seen depicted already in this episode, Spock's, like, the attic in Spock's quarters must have so many fucking banker's boxes full of decorations in it.
Yeah.
Like, Vulcan Christmas, Vulcan Halloween, soul sharing ceremony, gongs, misc bell racks.
At least on Discovery, you can plausibly think that, like, one of the little robots goes around and sets things up. But on this ship, you know, Spock's going around lighting all the candles.
Yeah. Yeah. Took a lot of work. And so she can't shut him down. She has to say yes, right?
I mean, she doesn't have to say yes. There is consent asked for and given.
Okay. Yes, but like,
I want to be very clear about that, Ben.
But also, she's under...
They both want this.
She's under a ton of pressure to say yes, given the amount of effort that's been put in.
I mean, it's easy to regret in a few moments, because once those candles go out... Here's the question about this. You see this moment practically, like, they do the body swap.
Yeah.
And as soon as the candles go out, they're like, holy shit, that wasn't supposed to last that long. How long was it supposed to last? Was it supposed to be just a moment of swap and that's it? Because they swap for a couple of seconds and they're already freaking out that it's taken too long.
I wonder, because the candles go out in the wide establishing, but the camera has been moving in a sort of like a curving arc around them. There's a, you know, the dirty single on both sides. Yeah. And then when we come out of that wide shot and the candles are out and it's dark in the room, the camera has crossed the line of 180. So we're on the other side. So
does the line cross suggest a passage of time?
I'm wondering, because T'Pring has been on the right of the composition in every shot until this moment. And then suddenly she's on the left. And I was wondering if
just read to me as body swap.
I was wondering if they were trying to like get two things out of that cross, like both passage of time and body swap. But it didn't feel like a long time. I'm not sure if the edit worked as intended.
It depends on what they were going for. It's just hard to know.
So this has become Freaky Vulcan Friday, and the two of them are in each other's bodies. Their souls have crossed over.
Something really freaky.
It's so interesting, right? Because this story has been told myriad times.
Yeah.
And what you get in this story is one actor taking on the other actor's mannerisms.
Right.
And doing them at the other person. But because there are even fewer mannerisms to distinguish what has happened to them because they're Vulcan.
Yeah.
All you basically get is like the subtle vocal modulation that the actors choose.
Yeah.
And it is totally sufficient. It seems so difficult to do it like this, and they really pull it off.
They did a great job with the subtlety of it.
Yeah.
This was not meant to happen. How do we switch back?
I do not know.
Cut to Pike's quarters. He's getting ready for his own shore leave. Admiral New Bob walks in. And it's that moment where you're talking to your boss and you're like, hey, boss, how's it going?
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
I'm about to head to the parking lot. Have a great weekend.
Yeah. And it's like, ooh, actually going to need you to stay. And I think I'm going to need you to come in tomorrow also.
Yeah. What do you think Pike was headed out to do?
I don't know. Probably bed another Starfleet captain.
The thing about Pike is that he's so fucking cool and he does such cool shit on the ship. What's even, like, what is his shore leave? How could it be even cooler than what he does on the ship?
Yeah.
I don't think we could even comprehend what he plans to do on Starbase One.
It's got to be some pretty fucked up shit.
Yeah.
So Admiral Newbob is like, hey, man, I know that the diplomacy that we were engaged in earlier seemed like it went great, but we have gotten word that it did not in fact go great. Fucked up.
They don't want to talk to you anymore.
Okay. Who do they want to talk to?
The Rungovians are like only willing to talk to Spock at this point. We have one last shot to save this whole situation. And you need to go get Spock. He's the only man that can save the day. And very funny smash cut back to Spock's quarters where Spock and T'Pring are desperately trying to get their souls back into the correct bodies.
There is one more chant I'd like to try. We might need a gong.
This was big fun.
That cut always works, right?
Yeah. It has to hurt Pike's soul to use the doorbell, right? Just anytime.
Yeah.
He stands outside the quarters. He looks at the doorbell thing. He's like, God damn it. I'm really going to have to make the beep, huh?
Going to have to do it. Should I hit it once or should I hit it twice?
Gia Sandu is the actor who plays T'Pring. The way she uses her eyebrows here as Spock, emphasizing the word action.
It appears that hijinks are the most logical course of action.
Yeah.
Like there's so many micro expressions that both she and Ethan Peck do that, like, we couldn't call attention to them all, but I really wanted to call attention to that one in this scene specifically because there's so much talk about hijinks and what they're going to do with Pike at the door and stuff.
I know how a door works.
It's great.
Yeah. I mean, they both did a great job kind of inhabiting each other's extremely subtle Vulcan performance. And the fun of trying to be, like, people with a stick up their ass being Freaky Friday'd is...
And also being conspirators, right?
Right. that is like what this episode makes hay out of. And
yeah.
This episode both knows how to make that a fun and funny situation, but it also does not get preoccupied with trying to find pretext for them not to admit what's going on.
Yeah.
Like
a lesser show would have leaned into the cover up for longer.
Right. And it would have been just like a, they can't tell anybody. And
yeah.
And that's like, I think the easy way to write the body swap comedy and the like, you know, we got to actually cop to this pretty early.
I think it's because Captain Pike is such a cool fucking dad. Is there anything you'd feel uncomfortable telling him?
No.
Right?
Can't think of anything.
I know.
Yeah.
You guys did a body swap, like your minds are in each other's.
That is correct.
So T'Pring as Spock is going to meet with the Rungovians, whether she likes it or not, and whether Spock likes it or not. It's like, I'd say that the other thing that is really funny about this is that the stakes are high enough that the Federation has to force T'Pring into this position.
Sounds like a picnic to me.
I think T'Pring kind of relishes the opportunity here, though, also to figure out what Spock's life is like, what right. his professional life is like.
And that's going to be the thing that goes down in this episode.
So T'Pring goes to negotiations and she leaves Spock behind to go absolutely crazy on that body.
And we cut away for good taste's sake to Number One and Lieutenant Singh, good cop, bad copping these yeomen that they've apprehended.
I like that you call it like shotgun, right? La'an calls bad cop.
Yeah, they both wanted to be bad cops so bad.
But anymore, like all you really have to say is cop, right?
Yeah.
But Una's the super nice cop. She is so nice.
Yeah.
She's going to give you the coffee, but not in order to lift DNA off of it after you drink it. She just wants to make sure you have a nice coffee.
What you have to remember is that whether you get the good cop or the bad cop, it's still a bastard. At the end of the day. And the Bolian is really warming up to her, but eventually they get the two of them together, and it's like, you're not getting shore leave. You're fucked. You got to go work for Chief Kyle.
No, not Chief Kyle.
He's so mean.
This is where we find out that Chief Kyle is a very shitty boss.
Yeah. What is that about?
So fucking hard to square with the very nice man that we've met in the past 4 episodes.
Boy, you think you know some people, right, Ben?
Yeah. What? He works that transporter like it's a fucking instrument.
Yeah.
He seems very deferential when he's talking to his superiors. And then he turns around and shits all over the lower decks.
How about that? That is so weird.
Hmm.
You don't see that very often. I think they were very specific about making the Bolian the one to experience the nice cop.
Yeah.
Because I never want to see a Bolian cry. Do you? Like, I just feel like the Bolians are so, like, nice.
Yeah.
They're in the hospitality industry mostly. Like, it would feel cruel.
You don't want to see what's under all that blue makeup when the tears start flowing and washing it away.
Yeah.
Not cool.
This is a show that's familiar with cop shows. They're interrogated separately before being brought together later.
Yeah. And, they're in big trouble. And this is when Number One learns about Enterprise Bingo, which we only know about because of the last time on. We couldn't possibly have known about it before this.
Could not. This is one of those frames that you freeze, right?
Yeah.
You want to see all of... Hey, what do you make of Enterprise Bingo not being on a bingo card also?
It's a list.
It's a list.
It's not really bingo.
Why are they calling it that?
The fun of bingo is that you have a random selection of letters and numbers, and so you might hit bingo and you might not.
This episode fucked up.
Well, this episode and the last time on.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what, Ben? Enterprise Bingo being depicted like this, beauty mark on the other side of the face.
Wow.
Show beautiful again. Perfectly symmetrical.
T'Pring's assistant contacts Spock in T'Pring's body to say, hey, listen.
Are you naked?
Oh, obviously not. It would be extremely complicated to get out of that.
I'm sure that I am great at this.
But yeah, the dude that they're there to apprehend will only talk to Pring, much in the same way that the Rungovians will only talk to Spock. So Spock is going to have to learn about what T'Pring's job is like, just the same way that T'Pring is learning about what Spock's job is like.
This is great.
Perfect. Swiss fucking watch.
Yep. So La'an and Una are working out the whole Enterprise bingo thing, and we see the whole list.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting stuff on this list that we don't see acted out, right? We see a bunch, but we don't see others.
Many interesting things that don't get acted out. The first one we see acted out is like reinstate chewing gum with flavor.
Were you surprised that they didn't beam the gum out? They beamed La'an chewing the gum away and then beamed them back?
Yeah, I was surprised by this. It seems insane that your mind state is preserved, but the flavor of the gum is like, we got to go back to earlier transporter records for that.
This is such a Q&A guy question, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Hi, in Star Trek Strange New World Season 1, Episode 5, it is depicted that Lieutenant La'an Nguyen Singh is chewing gum, goes through the transporter buffer in sick bay, and rematerializes with gum that has had its flavor reinstated. How does this bear on Dr. Mbenga's daughter, who is in the sick bay transporter buffer at the time?
Yeah, follow-up question. I was just sitting next to this guy. I don't know. Does this suggest that if Dr. Mbenga's daughter is chewing gum inside the transport buffer, that that gum will never lose flavor?
I'm going to take the answer to both of those questions in Quark's bar.
Get a life.
Give me these coffee mugs, Ben, in the Enterprise lounge.
Ooh.
These look like some double-walled jobs.
Yeah, they do look good.
Damn, they look real good. They look good, and they decide to do bingo in this scene.
I mean, if we wanted to, you know.
Yeah.
Get a better understanding of the crew.
They're in the elevator, you know, shouting orders at the computer and seeing whose order gets honored. They're shooting each other in the hallway.
Oh.
Yeah.
That really stinks.
Even though we know that you can't fire an unauthorized phaser aboard a Federation starship.
When you roll with Una, though, every phaser's authorized, right?
Wow. Yeah.
You get a license to phase.
Good point.
Elsewhere on Starbase One, Chapel and Ortegas are kind of post-gaming the bad date that she had with Colin Jost. When T'Pring shows up and Ortegas is invited to leave.
Yeah.
In a way that on paper probably seems cruel, but in the scene, I think reads as just like T'Pring being T'Pring, right?
Ortegas reads as being relieved to be
let
out of this deal.
She wants to go, yeah.
She's talking to Nurse Chapel like, you gave love and relationship advice to a Vulcan?
Yeah.
No.
I do not want to be around for this.
Yeah.
Good luck, you two.
It leaves Chapel and T'Pring to sit on a couple of park benches together where the truth is revealed.
Yeah, Chapel finds out that this is in fact Spock, and Spock has not been having fun with those tit-hays.
I had not taken the time to consider it.
Really?
No. In fact, Chapel like views this as an interesting medical problem to solve, a problem whose solution is going to take a while. And in that amount of time, she suggests that Spock participate in Take Your Partner's Cotcher to Work Day.
Yeah, maybe there's some positive to come out of a freaky Vulcan Friday situation.
Yeah, maybe go do that Barjon job. So La'an and Una decide to finish the list. The list is what I'm calling it. I'm not calling it bingo.
Wow.
And walk by the panel that the coolest ensign on the ship, Ensign Lance, rammed his face into as they're talking about it.
Right.
Do you think this was this is one part of the repairs that they're doing at the Starbase, right? They turn this corner. That's Lance's window.
Oh, man. The Ensign Lance Memorial Window is what we'll call it from now on.
That beautiful face. Going through that glass.
Yeah. I mean,
don't destroy something beautiful, Strange New Worlds. Don't do it.
I just want a little bit doofy glasses man to have a shot on this show, you know? I want to. Yeah. We talk about inclusion and the value of people seeing themselves in Trek.
Yeah. I've never seen you in Star Trek, Ben.
Ever.
Yeah. Your time is coming.
Someday. Back in the negotiations on the Starbase, Spock, or T'Pring in a Spock skin, really shows up to meet with the Rongovians. And now suddenly they're acting super Vulcan-y, and Admiral Neubob and Captain Pike are just like hanging out on some couches, just watching what's going down with this. And they're just like, what the fuck happened with these guys? They were so cool. Look at them now. They're not cool anymore.
It's crazy. They're in one of the coolest rooms ever depicted on Star Trek, and they got to watch this negotiation here.
Yeah.
And remain engaged in it.
Brutal.
Pike can't wait to jump in here.
Yeah.
He sees Spock / T'Pring kind of flail, and he jumps in there to not interfere with the negotiation, but to defend Spock.
Yeah. It's not even really defending him so much as just paying Spock a big fat compliment.
You, Mr. Spock, are simply everything that is great about Starfleet.
If Spock had a basement, it would totally be flooded, right?
Well, that's the thing, is that this is really T'Pring, and therefore there is a flooded basement.
Yeah.
Thank you, Captain.
It's a mental basement, though. Basements are a spectrum.
But, like, you look at Pike, right? He's got 6 inches of show hair if he's got one.
It's basement flooding by proxy, isn't it?
Yeah. He knows who he's talking to.
Yeah.
This isn't for Spock. It's not for the fucking diplomats. It's for T'Pring.
Pike is doing work on a negotiation between worlds and among two romantic worlds, right?
He is both opening up a trade empire for the Federation and getting his science officer's dick wet.
Maybe the strangest new world is a Vulcan's heart.
So the Rongos are like, cool, well, that was really touching. We'll catch you one more time before we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to go for now. And Pike has like apologized to T'Pring in the Spock suit. And we cut down to the Starbase where Dr. Mbenga is just living his best life as a fisherman.
God, give me like 10 minutes. Give me the montage. Just 10 minutes of Mbenga fishing.
Yeah.
For real.
Is that Cotopaxi raincoat that he's wearing?
Yeah.
It's good.
Was this the same location that Nepenthe was filmed? Like that dock and the wooded area?
Oh, probably. Yeah. I mean, it's filmed in Toronto, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Really gorgeous.
Yeah.
He's so happy. Have we ever been that happy?
Never once.
Yeah.
I want to be Mbenga happy.
I know. Me too.
The Vulcan criminal guy that has been, you know, much ballyhooed. It's just a dude that's playing like chess solitaire, apparently.
Yeah.
And Spock in the T'Pring suit and Nurse Chapel walk up and start talking to this dude. It's a lot of, you know, Vulcan barbs being traded. A lot of like, oh, you claim to be a Vulcan and yet you're fucking Spock, who is only half Vulcan. So you've insulted all Vulcans everywhere by doing that.
Yeah.
I always found you curious among Vulcans, T'Pring, for your tolerance of these creatures.
He rejects logic and yet he uses it as a weapon.
Barjan contains multitudes.
Hmm.
And he deserves a punch in the face for that.
To tell you the truth, I came here today with every intention of considering rehabilitation. But the company you keep changed my mind.
You listen here.
And he catches it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is great.
He gets KO'd.
Chapel watches this with delight. This is big fun.
Yeah. Barjan came to bargain. T'Pring came to knock him out. Chapel came to stand for Federation values and get T'Pring home safe, because the next scene is Chapel and Mbenga like scooping goo onto the foreheads of Spock and T'Pring's bodies.
Trust me, this will become Federation standard eventually.
He embeds some crystals in the fish guts, and then they like wave a light over the crystals and it lights them up, and it looks like it hurts a lot.
Yeah.
But it reverses the Katra swap.
There's an elliptical edit to later where Spock is sitting up right now and he's getting an exam from Chapel. And the procedure seems to have worked. Yeah. And Spock is filled with gratitude for the medical procedure, but also the advice. Chapel is like, look, man, the honesty thing, I know you may on the surface just be thinking this has to be a thing between you and T'Pring, but like, be a little honest with yourself too about what's going on here. And I think you'll go a long way.
Yeah, what you need from a relationship and what you're willing to give to a relationship. And we cut to Spock and T'Pring kind of post-gaming their experience. And man, I thought that this was going to be the reconciliation style of breakup. Like the, hey, I think you're great and I am so glad to have had the time with you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's clear to both of us that this isn't a thing that we can do.
Right.
It is not that. It is the reconciliation into Get Down. Get down, get down. It's not setting up a breakup. It's setting up a fuckfest.
I mean, it is, but like, what a summit they have beforehand.
Yeah.
In recognition of obligation being the death of fun or spontaneity or love or like the good things in any relationship.
Right.
And they're both like, look, we want to be here because we want to be here, not out of obligation or duty or anything. That's where the good stuff is in any relationship.
Obligation and duty are a part of it, but the wanting to be here is most important of all.
The only duty that Spock wants is to please that booty.
And the implication of this elliptical edit is that he does.
Right.
As do I.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Pike is being a messy diplomat who loves drama. He does not tell Admiral Neubob or Cadet Uhura what his plans are with the Rongovians. He just tells them to sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And the Rongovians walk in, and his closing argument to them is some chaotic shit.
Yeah.
Why should we ally with your Federation?
Easy. You shouldn't.
Chris.
It feels like reverse psychology.
He's basically telling them all the reasons.
You don't want to be with me. I'm too much trouble.
Look at all this show hair. It's 6 fucking inches of show hair. Do you want to be with somebody that does this to themselves every morning?
His sideways facing badge starts going down and down and down. Look at you losing interest. You must be this tall to ride the Federation.
And he holds his hand up to where his show hair crests out at.
Yeah.
They walk out. Admiral Bob is like, the fuck was that, Chris?
Yeah.
You're risking an alliance that could be the key to the Federation's future security on a hunch?
Isn't it time for you to retire, Robert April?
Yeah. And then they look out at the Rongovian ship, which has been established as a ship that flies the flag of the one that brung them when they decide who to make a diplomatic treaty with. It starts flying the Federation flag, baby.
Yeah. Fly it high, fly it big.
The key was that they are a species that values empathy above all other things. And by showing them that he could put himself in their shoes, that he could see all of the reasons why they might have hesitations about the Federation, he showed that he understood them in some way.
The Rongovians are the type that go vacation in a country with an accent and go and immediately have that affected accent themselves. They come back from a trip to London and they are just so annoying.
Pip, pip, governor. Where's the queen?
Yeah. Outside the ship, Una and La'an are walking on the hull. How are they doing it? There's a force field up. Keeps them comfortable.
Yeah, they made one of those force fields that's like the tunnel that you go through at a theme park where there's sharks swimming over you.
It looks like this panel, the Scorch panel, is directly in front, like in the eye line of the bridge's view screen.
It is.
How does anyone sneak out there to sign this thing?
This is the most chaotic shit that the fuck... I mean, that's why it's the last thing on the list.
Yeah, yeah, this is the hardest. It's easier to sit in Pike's chair than to do this.
If you're one of the like 35 people that has gotten Enterprise Bingo, you are a fucking legend in Starfleet.
Yeah, it's true. So they go out there and they see the Scorch.
Yeah.
And it's the oldest unreplaced piece of the ship's hull. This is a great little bit of trivia here.
We're lucky that the fucking Gorn didn't shoot it off in that battle.
Yeah. Yeah, they got real lucky, didn't they? Yeah. They used space chalk to sign it.
Yeah. And they've stolen some yeoman valor.
Sure have. Yeah, this isn't for them.
No.
Why are they signing this?
For the lower decks. Leave the lower decks to do their shit.
La'an signs the cool S for Sing. That's fun.
While they're out there, the Rungovian sail ship goes overhead, and we get like a sustained couple of minutes of Star Trek majesty watching a cool ship space around.
This is actually my first appearance in Star Trek. They stretched me thin. Real thin.
Not my first appearance in the show error dates, but in the chronology of the shows themselves.
Right. Yeah, exactly. On my way to steal your girlfriend.
Speaking of girlfriends, Spock and T'Pring are in kind of a post-coital reverie.
Yeah.
They're hanging out, having a good old time.
You hope Spock ensured that T'Pring was able to ring her bells first. It's only logical.
Yeah. And then hang them up on that hook on the wall where you keep your bell hexagon.
Uh-huh.
I loved the continuity of there being a bell hexagon on the wall at his quarters after seeing it in his dream.
That's great. Yeah.
The button on the episode is back on the Starbase. Ortegas and Chapel are in another bar having a drink. Looks like Ortegas might be sipping on a jipper.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah. Ortegas got a blue drink. A lieutenant after my own heart, let's just say.
Yeah. Poor Lieutenant Colin Jost. Out of the picture now.
Yeah.
Out of the picture to make room, I think.
Yeah, because you've been talking a lot about Chapel Spock and whether one would ship.
I'm shipping Spapple.
I think I might be shipping Chortegas.
What? That is not what this scene suggests at all.
Because earlier in the episode, it is heavily implied that Chapel is not just interested in fellas, but also ladies.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And the like little awkward moment there at the end made me think that perhaps these two could get together.
Can anyone on New Star Trek just be friends? I think that's what this is. I think this is a cool as hell friendship here between Chapel and Ortegas.
I'm happy for it to be a cool as hell friendship.
I'm all out of Star Trek money to bet. Otherwise, I would bet on this. I put all of my chips on number one, keeping Pike out of the beeping chair.
All right.
I'm down to the felt.
I'm just saying that the house is giving better odds on Chortegas than they are on Spapple.
Spapple's where it's at. Let's put a poll up.
Okay, we'll put a poll.
Yeah, we've done it before.
Yeah.
See what happens.
We'll see what happens.
We'll leave it up for a day.
Meanwhile, I want to see what happens when I ask you, did you like this episode?
Really big turn off of course for this show, like an outlier show in theme. Maybe the most relatable Star Trek episode in a long time, right?
Yeah.
The themes are right there. I really like the story quite a bit. I like a field trip story on any show, right?
Yeah.
We're taking the show car and we're taking it off of these rails and we're putting it on a different set of rails and we're going somewhere else. And I thought the show was super fun for it. Getting our characters out of their jobs and talking about other things.
Mm-hmm. I think coming back to Starbase One from time to time is a really nice bit of show design to make this feel like a traditional Star Trek show that is like pulling from that episodic energy that people have been missing in other new Trek, but also kind of putting a different bit of English on the baseball so that it, you know, just feels a little bit different. There's like a home base that they tag from time to time.
I mean, routine maintenance as an episode cold open, like there are a dozen examples of that in Star Trek.
Totally. And it's just another character building episode too for so many of these characters. Like We said this in, I think, the first or second episode of this show, that we knew the Bridge crew better than we knew Discovery. We know them as well as we know most Bridge crews at this point.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real strong point in this show, that the cast is such an ensemble. We just recorded right before this an episode of Voyager that I think exemplified this as well, where like you can just have Ensign Kim and Seven have a storyline for a little while, and it's like it doesn't feel like a distraction, you know, or like I've never met these characters before. It's like I want to see what happens when these two characters are put together, or these two characters are put together. And this show has the confidence that these are a bunch of interesting characters, and you pair them off or group them off or tell a story about just one of them. And all of those are valid kinds of stories to tell within the context of the show. It's a show that understands Star Trek as a place in its DNA. And an episode like this is really fun to watch for that reason.
Great choice by the episode to not include all of the scenes of Hammer getting reconstructive hand surgery and then going through the physical therapy of getting his hand to work again.
Yeah. That stuff got left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. And I think that's a good idea. Well, never on the cutting room floor, Ben. Mm. Our priority one messages.
True.
Do you want to make sure that they make the show?
Let's do it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first priority one message is from Josh. It is to Leah. Message goes like this. Happy 9th wedding anniversary / 13th date anniversary to my lovely wife.
Wow.
Thank you for getting me into podcasts and your welcome for me getting you into Star Trek. Here's to many more years of silly nerdiness together. All my love, Josh. P.S. Do you think we should finally tell the boy that he was named after the emissary of the prophets?
Whoa.
Damn.
Let's do it.
I mean, Cisco's a great name.
Yeah. It's a solid name for a boy.
Good job going for that.
I would never name a boy Benjamin.
Right. I wish I knew when my dateversary was. That's a date that is that's just gone.
It's lost to history.
From both of our recollections, yeah.
My dateversary happened to coincide with the nomination of Barack Obama for the presidency. So I we have it locked down. But it's also like my wife and I are both the kind of person that forgets that our anniversary is coming up, and then like,
well, that's good. You're both on the same level.
We're both on the same level with that in a way that is like routinely humiliating. Like we'll be out with friends like 2 days after our wedding anniversary, and they'll be like, "Hey, what'd you do for your anniversary?" And we'll be like, "The what?"
That's great.
I really respect that Josh and Leah know their dateversary and their wedding anniversary, and it seems like they maybe lined them up to kind of coincide.
Perfect.
That rules.
Like that a lot.
Much respect. Adam, our second priority one message is from Ramon LP4. It's been a while since we've heard from Ramon LP4. It's to Samuel Clemens. Goes like this. Theory: Ben's Picard equals Sean Connery. Test: 1. Secret Ben coin flip to see who will play Dathan, his Picard, or his Connery. The other will play Picard. 2. Ben alone reads from the Darmok script where Picard and Dathan first meet on Eladrell. Can you tell who's who? P.S. Austin, May 21st. Whoop! PPS, shout out to our GM, Kyle Revest, and the rest of our STA Dauntless crew. I hope I didn't butcher the pronunciation of Kyle's last name.
Do you understand this?
So I think Secret Ben coin flip to see who will play Dathan.
I don't understand this. Ben's Picard equals Sean Connery.
I think Ramon wants to hear if I sound like Connery when I play Picard.
If your Picard sounds like Connery, yeah.
So
I'll be Dathan.
So you be Dathan. And,
yeah.
All right. Okay, this is... here starts the reading.
Darmok and Jalad.
You want to fight with me? Is that it? A challenge?
Darmok, Angelot!
I don't know who or what Dimarch Angelot are, but I certainly didn't come here to start a war.
God damn it. Dimarch Angelot at Tanagra!
Sorry, Captain.
Fucking bullshit. Shaka, when the walls fell.
One ping only, Dathan.
Dathan just gets more profane in frustration.
Wow. Well, I feel a little bit called out by Ramon LP4, but if you'd like to call one of us out, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron and get a Priority One message. It's been really nice to see the P1s start to populate over here on The Greatest Discovery.
Sure is. Thanks for all the support of the show. Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! Oh, I sure did, Adam, and I wrote a note to remind myself. Oh, yes. Ensign Fuckboy, a.k.a. Ensign Colin Jost, a.k.a. the guy that did not make it with Nurse Chapel.
Uh-huh.
Still at the bar in the scene, like, later on where she's at the table hanging out with Spock, trying to give him relationship advice.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was such a funny thing. Like, the camera is like, shooting the bar from the other direction, and he's just deep in the background, like, drinking his sorrows. I thought it was so funny that after he gets shut down, he just fucking stayed there.
What else are you going to do?
I don't know. Go somewhere else. Like, you got, like, look through your text, see if you got invited to anything by a friend, or maybe catch a movie at the cinema down the street.
I like that detail. I think it's cool.
Don't stay at the bar.
Yeah.
How about you? Did you find an Edward Larkin?
I think what La'an does to get the fuck out after bringing Vaso and Brad in to see Pike is big fun.
Sir, I should go do the security things.
Yeah.
She's great. It's good stuff. She's funnier than you'd expect.
True.
In scenes like this.
It's a funny episode, man. The jokes are subtle and good.
Also funnier than you'd expect, our producer, Wendy Pretty, who is hilarious in person and in edit.
Yeah, she'll tell us what the next episode's about.
Yeah, and from here we hand the episode off to her.
The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. Next up on Star Trek Strange New Worlds, it's episode 6, Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. A threat to an idyllic planet reunites Captain Pike with the lost love of his life. To protect her and a scientific holy child from a conspiracy, Pike offers his help and is forced to face unresolved feelings of his past. As always, we want to thank Adam Ragusea, who composed all of the original music that you hear on this show. He's got a great podcast and a YouTube cooking channel that you should go get subscribed to. Thanks also to the card daddy, Bill Tilly, who handles the social media for Uxbridge Shimoda. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Greatest Trek, and use the hashtag Greatest Discovery to talk about the show online. Your ratings and reviews are always appreciated, as are the many members who support the production of this show at MaximumFun.org/join. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more of The Greatest Discovery.
We having fun yet?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.